in the studios of WBAI, the guest of Hugh Hamilton and Talkback. It's 7 a.m. here in New York City at 99.5 FM WBAI, WBAI.org on the web. It is time for What's Going On with Bob Henley and Marianne Pizzatola. Please stay tuned.
There's far too many of you dying.
You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today.
Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Good morning, New York and New Jersey and the great world beyond. I'm Bob Henley, and this is the Friday edition of What's Going On, the Labor and Healthcare Report. Michael G. Haskins is our audio engineer. It's May 16th, 2025. And yes, there are no New Jersey Transit trains moving this morning. Very strange to wake up here in Neptune and not hear that haunting sound by which we subconsciously set our lives. The time of our life, we know when the trains are coming and going, not this morning, because the train engineers are on a righteous strike. For more details, check out our WBA website and my in-depth interview with Tom Haas, chairman of the Teamsters Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. Yes, it's Friday when we focus on healthcare, America's number one labor issue. I'm joined by Marianne Pizzatola, retired FDNY EMT and president of the New York City Organization of Public Service Retirees. She's been successfully battling New York City Mayor Adams' plan to force the public service retirees onto a predatory Aetna Medicare Advantage plan that is... Say it with us
now. Neither Medicare nor Advantage.
There she is. Good morning, Marianne. I understand that you and 100 of your retirees spent a few hours on the bus to Albany to be present for final court arguments in one of your cases yesterday. Have you all recovered? You look pretty good.
Oh, thank you. At least I look better than I feel. Thank you. Thank you. It was a very long day. I literally a 12 hour day. We left City Hall. We met at City Hall at 8 a.m. We didn't land back here until almost 9 p.m. And it was a very, very long, long day. Court is always very difficult, but it was very interesting oral arguments. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about it later when Joe pops on. Yeah. But it was, again, interesting. And I can tell you, you know, we don't know what the court will do. Fine for us, not fine for us. This is a very high threshold, but whatever happens, it does not negate the two lower courts finding that Medicare Advantage is a diminishment of our federal public health benefit. And New York City retirees were made a promise that would be to their detriment if we were forced into a predatory privatized Medicare Advantage plan.
Absolutely right. There's a lot of blockbuster healthcare news in addition to that to get to. We're going to catch up with our friend Jen Coffey, one of the nation's leading healthcare activists, a former EMT and member of the New Hampshire State Legislature. She'll be joined by Dr. Steve Auerbach, one of the nation's leading public health experts who served, has a distinguished career in the U.S. Health Service. And it wouldn't be Friday without, as Marianne previewed, hearing from WorkBite's Joe Maniscalco. But first, let's check in. We'll probably get to your phone calls, too, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. But first, let's check in with Catherine Carley with the Public News Service.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. One of the things I've always wanted to do is be a mentor and an example for the young people in our community so they could believe that their dreams were possible.
Omaha, Nebraska Mayor-elect John Ewing says his city is embarking on a new chapter. The first black mayor of the state's largest city says he wants to focus on affordable housing, public safety, and giving young people more reasons to stick around. Democrats say in a state where nearly two-thirds backed President Donald Trump, Ewing's substantial victory signals a rejection of Trump policies and a potential preview of next year's midterms. The Supreme Court heard the Trump administration's arguments for doing away with birthright citizenship and ending the ability of individual federal courts to stop executive actions nationwide. The justices appeared intent on keeping the nationwide injunctions that are blocking the administration's citizenship rules. Massachusetts Attorney General Andrea Campbell joined more than 20 other Democratic attorneys general in suing to keep what they call a constitutional protection.
If they can dismantle the 14th Amendment in our Constitution, they could also dismantle the other rights and privileges afforded our residents. First Amendment, Second Amendment, you name it.
A decision is expected by the end of June. Arguments are underway in a federal appeals court regarding mass challenges to voter registrations in Georgia. Plaintiffs allege a 2021 law allowing unlimited challenges enables illegal voter intimidation. House Republicans say they're optimistic that they'll vote on their massive tax and budget bill next week. Lawmakers say they intend to speed up new Medicaid work requirements to secure votes for more hardline conservatives. Georgia Republican Congressman Rich McCormick calls the requirements common sense.
Nothing to be celebrated in the fact that there will be a little belt tightening, but a lot of it's just getting rid of illegitimate spending, getting people to actually take charge of their destiny.
The legislation would slash Medicaid by more than $600 billion to pay for tax cuts, mostly aimed at wealthy households and corporations. The Congressional Budget Office estimates more than 8 million Americans could lose health coverage. At least two dozen states are considering their own versions of the Federal SAVE Act, which requires proof of citizenship to register to vote. Marissa Carpio with the Equality State Policy Center in Wyoming says her state already has some of the lowest voter turnout in the nation, and requiring new documents will only make it worse.
It could disenfranchise people who already struggle to vote, those like women in shelters, people on the Wind River Reservation, and those without stable housing.
The SAVE Act would effectively end third-party or online voter registration. The Wyoming law also allows county clerks to reject an application if there's any indication the person is not a U.S. citizen. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Thanks so much, Catherine. So it's great to welcome back Jen Coffey. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning.
Excellent. So taking attendance. And also we have, Dr. Steve Auerbach. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here, Bob.
So CNN is reporting that United Healthcare, one of America's biggest companies, imploding with its stock losing half its value. A staggering $288 billion in the span of just a month. Now, CEO Andrew Witty stepped down abruptly for personal reasons. UnitedHealth also swiftly abandoned its financial guidance, blaming skyrocketing medical costs. It's also relevant to mention as Witty earned over $26 million in 2024. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal reporting this week, UnitedHealthcare is under federal criminal investigation for possible Medicare fraud. So what's your reaction, Jen? I know you did a great imitation of Sir Witty. I will never forget when you did that dying at Wall Street. I know. So what's your take on this?
Well, I'm hoping that this change with them will actually do something valuable for patients, but I'm worried because so far all Hemsley has done is talk to stakeholders, talk to employees, talk to shareholders, but I've yet to hear him say anything to us, the members, and the people who are suffering because this company denies and delays care all the time.
Yeah, this is we're recognizing that they're not alone in this kind of an issue. Evidently, United Healthcare is not the only one that's coming under scrutiny. The Department of Justice announced a false claims case against Aetna, Anthem, and Humana, alleging that the healthcare brokers allegedly directed Medicare beneficiaries to the plans offered by insurers that paid brokers the most kickbacks. And we ironically saw that in the Aetna plan with the city of New York, that there were quote-unquote gain-sharing provisions in our own contract. According according to the complaint, the brokers incentivize their agents to sell plans based on the kickbacks, setting up teams of insurance agents who could sell only those plans, and at times refuse to sell MA plans of insurers who did not pay sufficient kickbacks. And I think I did a video on this where we showed that there were a bunch of agents on a screen on a Zoom call training others and giving them tips on how to maximize their kickbacks up to three times what they should have been paid. What's your reaction to that, Dr. Steve?
Well, business as usual, and what's new? This is what the insurance companies have been doing for years. I guess I'm a little bit more cynical that anything good for patients and persons living in America will change with all of this. I mean, what we are seeing is how for-profit corporate health insurance is a way of financing our healthcare system is an inherently self-conflicted, broken model. One of the things that happened was after the murder of the CEO and after there was greater attention to
Brian Thompson,
So after the so after that, there was greater attention being paid to the harms to patients, and so they offered some vague reassurances to patients, they being the insurance companies like United. And then, of course, what happened was the moment they said, oh, no, we're going to do better by our patients, then the stockholders got frightened that their profits weren't going to meet quarter-on-quarter bumps. And so they got pummeled and sued by the stockholders. The fraud cases, you know, have this goes back years. You can just track, you know, year after year after year, there are these cases that come up at the state and federal level. They get paid as a cost of doing business. Meanwhile, United still employs 10% of American physicians. They still talk out of both sides of the mouths when it comes to pharmacy managers. Pharmacy benefit managers, because of course they own the pharmacy benefit managers, so they condemn their, you know, with out of one mouth they say, oh, PBMs are the problem, and then out of the other mouth, you know, it's just another piece of their balance sheet, playing games with one side of the balance sheet to the other. I'm dubious. There is some alleged bipartisan Medicare Advantage heavy on the quote-unquote reform by both Republicans and Democrats in Congress. But the conservative movement is absolutely committed to continuing to privatize all public goods, including Medicare. So I'm doubtful in the long run, or even in the 12-month run, that anything good's going to happen.
Right. And so, Jenny, as you mentioned, it's the I guess, the successor to Sir Whitty, is CEO Stephen Helmsley. He doesn't seem to have a sir in front of his name. He'll get an annual base salary of $1 million and a one-time $60 million equity award. That's according to Reuters. Jen, you also, one of the things we have seen is finally some real detail about what is in store for Medicaid folks with this GOP House bill. And so we're now looking in that before it was $880 billion cut. Now, as Catherine Carley informed us, it's like $600 billion. And we're hearing all kinds of things on the, on Fox about, well, now it's time for those Medicaid people to start working. And when you look, drill down, there's a reality that so many millions of Medicaid recipients, particularly through ACA, the Affordable Care Act, are working. And then they folks are also disabled. Can you talk about this potential implosion of the Affordable Care Act by this gutting of Medicaid? There's a connection there, isn't there?
To put it frankly, people are going to die. People are going to die. We are taking away the very tools that they're holding on to life with. You're talking about Medicare, what is it? One in four kids are on Medicaid, right? You look at people in nursing homes. What are we going to do with our elderly? Are we going to throw them out of nursing homes because the bills don't get paid? Medicaid is a lifeline for so many segments of our society. And the people that can have Medicaid are making pittance. They're making pennies. They can't even afford to pay their rent. They're balancing groceries with medications. And now you want them to pay a premium on that? What are they going to pay it with? Are they going to take out the milk and the bread? Are they going to ask the landlord for an extension on their rent?
These not the eggs. Certainly not the eggs. They could go down to their bodega now and buy. We're selling eggs as Lucy's, like cigarettes, like three in a bowl. One if you're really good.
Yeah. So the plan is to kick. The plan is to kick millions and millions of people off of Medicaid. And as Jen was saying, Medicaid actually covers persons of at all ages. You know, it covers 20-25% of births, antenatal care, children and adults and the elderly in both home care and long term care. But it's being done in multiply devious, clever ways in that, for example, one of the things that's going through as the alleged compromise, quote unquote, is, and the connection to the ACA, is to cut the federal payments, co-share that the feds pay to states for Medicaid. So what this is in effect doing is it's washing the federal government hands of it in order to do the tax cuts for the wealthy. And we need to remember all of this. It's not just the goal of cutting Medicaid. It's the goal of taking the money that should be going to Medicaid, that should be going to researching cancer, that should be going to protections for consumers, and giving it to tax cuts for billionaires. But with the shift from the federal share, what this means is they're shifting the burden and decision-making to the states. And this has the additional political goal of, let's say, a blue state like here in New York, or a relatively blue state like here in New York, to have to make the decision at the state level, are we going to use state funds to cover the difference? Or are we going to do a race to the bottom and copy Florida and Texas and do less? And so it not only is harming patients, but it's a deliberate attack, from the Republicans onto state level Democrats and blue states on whether or not they're going to raise their taxes, and we should be taxing the wealthy more, or cutting benefits and having a race to the bottom. So it has multiple nefarious reasons for happening this way.
New York City retirees.
If I can jump in.
Bob and I have spoken about this before, that we have a lot of dual eligible retirees that are both on Medicare and Medicaid. And you're absolutely correct, Dr. Auerbach, in that many of our seniors do rely on the Medicaid aspect in taking care, providing that home care or nursing care to them that they don't get from straight Medicare. So Medicaid fills a lot of those gaps for people, and they're low income enough that that's what they have. To take that away from them puts their lives at risk and creates a grave burden to their families. As Jen did say before, we also learned about people making those choices, those very difficult choices, when those costs get so high that they're literally chopping their pills in half instead of taking the full dosages of their medications, or not taking their medications because they need the money for utility or for food. And this is not how we should be treating our American population. For one of the wealthiest countries in the world, our healthcare is absolutely abominable, that we don't value the human life the way other countries do. We don't really care what happens. And the trickle-down effect is also going to be on the hospitals, because they do, doctors do have a duty to treat the people that do come in there, whether they get paid or not. When people get sick or hurt or living on the street because they're homeless and need health care, they're going to the hospital. So that will destroy everything all the way down.
So, Jen, you were going to say?
A couple points to piggyback off of what Steve was saying. Here in New Hampshire, to give an example, and this is going to happen in different states around the country, we have a trigger law, if you will. So if the federal government is going to come back on the Medicaid dollars, the state has a law that says, well, if they're cutting, then we aren't going to pick up the slack. We're going to go back to pre-levels before we had, right? So this is even worse. So not only is the federal government doing that, but a number of states have automatic laws that are going to just cut them off right at the right at that. What I was going to say about what Marianne was saying is she's 100% correct. I have CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome. And if your listeners may or may not know, it's the most painful disease known to medicine. And people in my community, including myself, are preparing for rationing. We're preparing because as a United Healthcare member, I've received a number of letters so far this year. They've been very aggressive as far as I'm concerned. They've announced their cut. They've told me they're not going to cover my treatments anymore. They sent me a form and told me to apply for reimbursement. Maybe they'll give me some money back. They denied another medication. I'm very concerned that I feel like they're being aggressive. And when you add to that the fact that the shareholders have filed a lawsuit, and in their lawsuit, and I'm taking this from CNBC, they said, quote, that they were upset because the aggressive anti-consumer tactics that it would have been needed to achieve their goals weren't done. They're mad that their goals right. didn't get hit. They didn't yeah. make enough money. They don't care
Which
how many people
Dr.
died
Steve's
in the process.
Point. Dr. Steve,
exactly.
Actually, and call us if you have concerns or an experience. We want to hear from you. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. So, Dr. Steve, coming full circle, the other thing we're seeing that in Pennsylvania, we do see where private venture capital had a couple of hospitals, I believe. That venture capital collapsed. The hospitals closed. So this is another thing going, as we do in the show, down to the granular level, the state level. Gretchen Morgenstern's great book, I'd love to have her on, called The Plunderers, right? A long time ago, really laid out in a map for us how capital, venture capital, and hedge funds had gotten into congregate care facilities, had gotten even into ER rooms, buying up practices. Could you bring that piece to the table to help us
understand? So we've had a series going back to way back to 1973 when for-profit medicine basically took off the United States. We've had a series of going from publicly traded stock companies like Hospital Corporation of America to then venture capital coming in and then private equity. It makes a difference in terms of just how evil each one is and how likely they are to go belly up under different circumstances. So as interest rates rose, a lot of the private equity gaming began to flounder. Now, they still extract profits for the investors, mind you. But when the hospitals go belly up, this then leaves communities without care. But don't worry, the people who put the money in early on definitely still made a profit. So we don't need to worry too much about them. That was a bit on the heavy sarcasm. But what we are seeing, is, as you said, these hospitals are going belly up in various areas, and the communities are then left without care, and the states are often left having to bail them out. So once again, it is, if you will, capitalism for the already rich, socialism for the already rich, and aggressive capitalism for the rest of us. And I just want to, piggyback on something I was alluded to before, which is that it doesn't have to be this way. You know, a lot of the articles we see criticize what's going on, but they don't point out, there's sort of a blanket refusal to acknowledge that it doesn't have to be this way. Every other rich capitalist democracy around the world does it differently, and we could too. We have the New York Health Act here in New York, which, I personally believe that state-based is the way to go because blue states will lead the way with proof of concept. We also have at the national level reintroduced the Medicare for All Act from Sanders, Dingell, and Jayapal. If I may, I'd like to also point out that we have a rally coming up on May 31st, Saturday, May 31st, 11 a.m. for those of you in the greater New York City area, at the Social Security Office building at 237 West 48th. That's 48th between Broadway and 8th Avenue. Save Medicare, save Medicaid, save Social Security. This is part of a nationwide series of actions. And again, it does not have to be this way. This is not lefty pie in the sky. Every other rich capitalist democracy in the world does it better. And we in America can do so too.
I wanted to take advantage of the fact that you are an expert on the big picture and talk a bit about what we're getting for our money and the way that American life expectancy, it's really a scandal. When you look at where we were at in the 40s and 50s and then the retreat, give us a sense of a top line in the sense that it's the most expensive healthcare system in the world with the poorest outcomes when you consider our ranking as supposedly a wealthy democracy. Give us the stats, Doctor.
So there's a classic bang for the buck curve, if you will, where the comparison is made on how much we spend GDP per capita versus, and I wish we were on television or video here. But going back to the 1970s, the United States was always at the bottom when you compare us to the other OECD countries, the other rich capitalist democracies around the world. But we were at least touching, if you will, where the others were. Especially since 1973, first with the HMO Act and then other neoliberal privatization of public goods with Medicare Part C, relabeled Medicare Disadvantage, and then some of the negative effects of the ACA. Since 1973, we've seen an accelerating divergence where the United States used to be touching, at least on the bang for the buck curve, all these other countries, and we are acceleratingly doing worse. So we used to be maybe 2 years less life expectancy and paying only 10% more, and now we're over 5 years discrepancy and paying 50% more.
Outstanding.
And we also have recent analyses. These are in the peer review journals across all countries, the wealthiest are, of course, living longer and have greater life expectancy and have greater added life expectancy. So once they've even reached adulthood, but the United States is the worst of those countries.
Excuse me, Dr. Steve, are you suggesting that the wealthy should not live much longer than the poor?
I believe, it was Mel Brooks who once said, it's good to be the king. And it's bad to be the rest of us. We've got both the fact that we have this huge increasing wealth and income inequality, and when it comes to the health impact, that too is growing. We need to do better. We need to improve the income for the other 95% of Americans. And we need to have comprehensive coverage for everybody living in America, regardless of changes in life circumstances. May I point out that United Health, even though they're being hammered by Wall Street this quarter, is still making huge profits? What they're being hammered on is expectations. What they're being hammered on is quarter-on-quarter reports. This is no way to finance healthcare.
Yeah, so I guess, Jen, I'm so glad you joined us. Is there anything we can put on the radar that you're doing? I know you're active in so many things, both in New Hampshire and around the country. What's on your agenda for the week ahead?
I know there's lots going on, but the most important thing I want to put out there is if you're struggling, if you're fighting the insurance company for the healthcare that you need, please go to careovercost.org. There is help at careovercost.org. You can tell your story. You can get people to help you file appeals. If you don't know how to do that, they'll help you. They'll walk you through it. You don't have to fight the insurance company alone.
Okay, that's great. We want to have you on and highlight that. Maybe do a whole hour around that on our national program. We decide America at the Crossroads with Jenna Flanagan. It comes on after Democracy Now. Okay, you game for that?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks so much, Dr. Auerbach. You want to repeat the coordinates of the rally and anything else you want to say in a minute?
Yes. So first of all, I would hope folks in both nationally and in the New York City area especially will join up for Physicians for National Health Program, PNHP.org nationally, PNHPNYMetro.org here in New York. And we have the upcoming rally on May 31st. That's a Saturday, 11 a.m. in Manhattan at the Midtown Social Security office. That's 237 West 48th Street. May 31st, 11 a.m. Save Medicare, save Medicaid, save Social Security.
All right. Thank you so much. That's Jen Coffey, former EMT, New Hampshire member of the New Hampshire legislature, national activist for health care that we can all live with. And of course, Dr. Steve Auerbach, who is a veteran in the U.S. Health Service and a leading advocate for single payer, particularly New York Health Act. We'll be back on the other side with Joe Maniscalco and an Albany postcard. Who doesn't want to hear that?
Have a great morning, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.
Union City Man. You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio in New York City, streaming live online at WBAI.org. I'm Bob Henley, and this is the Friday edition of What's Going On, the Labor and Healthcare Report with Marian Pizzatola. If you find this kind of public affairs programming that discusses these issues frankly and directly, we need you to show your support. We're in our, it does seem like it never ends, but it doesn't end because it's time is now fun drive, and it's very clear that we need the station now more than ever. We need you to call 833-922-4692, 833-922-4692. It sounds like the train that's not running through your neighborhood in New Jersey today. That's 833-922-4692. Please, there'll be volunteers who are probably busy with all the calls, we hope. That's how we got to, I think, around 155,000 out of the 250,000 we need. It's taken us a really long time to get there, to be honest, since February 14th. We've been waiting for you to show us your love, and we really need you to do that now. We also do love letters, cards and letters. Please consider mailing a check or money order to Pacifica, WBAI, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's Pacifica, WBAI, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. One of the things that you might want to consider is becoming a WBAI buddy, which really does help. And for as little as $10 a month, you contribute to us, and that really results in us being able to stabilize the station. You know, we're not selling things anymore. You may notice we're not selling you things. We're not selling you merchandising. It's not a new age QVC of the air, because the programming has to be the premium in a time when we're dealing with an actual junta in the White House. When you support us with a sustaining contribution, it means that we have – can do things like make sure that we're in the field to cover the protests we've been covering. You probably, if you've been tuning in, hear that we're present with you making history. You can hear us. We are around where you are. We are there when Mayor Ros Barak is released from detention after doing his job to make sure that there's fire code inspection for a private prison that's in his city that's going to house 1,000 people. We are there when individuals have been scooped up off the street with green cards and are on their way to El Salvador and they get one last chance to be in a federal court. We are there. And so to be there, we need you to be here. That's why we need you to call 1-833-922-4692, 1-833-922-4692. We would not be on the air, just to be honest with you, if not for sustaining sponsorships from unions representing 3 million households, like the American Federation of Government Employees, representing 850,000 federal workers in all 50 states. The Transport Workers Union of America, representing 155,000 members across the airline, railroad, transit, university, utility, and service sectors. And, of course, the New York City Central Labor Council. Yes, it's Friday. We'll get back on task. Enough of trying to stay alive by raising money. Maria Pizzatola, retired FDNY EMT, did so much with her union when she was at Local 2507, really helping with folks finding their way through the circuitous route of the World Health World Trade Center Health
Trade
Program.
Center
of
Health
course,
Program.
That's right. Thank you very much. And then, of course, you're the one that was on the bus all day. And Joe Maniscalco, our intrepid colleague who edits Work Bites. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Morning, Joe. Bob. Morning, Marianne. Nice to see you.
You all look pretty good, being that you were like doing hard duty there, Joe. So what was the field trip like?
Yeah, so you know, it was a long haul, definitely for everybody. Again, these retirees should be inspiring everybody in the labor movement by what they've accomplished. But yeah, there was a lot of upset and sadness after the hearing, and that's because a lot of it had to hinge on this issue of promissory estoppel, this legal issue, and you know in interrogating the issue and doing a due diligence, the judges might have appeared that they were giving credence to the city's argument that the retirees would never promise the health care that they have, which really upset everybody because they have their lived experience. They know that that's exactly what it was. And, you know, they know it was from the very beginning a recruitment and retention tool. As, you know, one retired teacher told me, she said, Joe, this was the jewel. This was the carrot. This is what kept you working for 30-something years to get your health care benefits. You know, right. That's why you stayed on the job. That was the motivation right there.
Right. I want to say, just to translation, promissory estoppel is a legal doctrine that enforces promises that wouldn't otherwise be enforceable as contracts. It prevents promisers from arguing that a promise shouldn't be upheld if the promisee, and that's the retiree, relied on it. Go ahead, Marianne.
Right. So in that argument, we argued that not only were we made this promise, but it would be to our detriment if it was changed. And there was an affidavit submitted in our case from Lillian Berrios Paoli, who was one of the deputy mayors. And she wrote in her affidavit that this was a way to attract and retain workers to stay in the city. So in the argument yesterday, the city of New York, unfortunately, a younger man, Mr. Richard Deering, an attorney for the city, diminished this amazing civil servant statement, legal statement, in saying that we used this as an attraction and retention tool to retain smart employees, good workers, to stay and serve for the city for decades, literally diminishing her statement, a legal statement, and what was her passion for working for the city. And so Lillian was listening to this in real time. and was very frustrated with how they were trying to diminish her words. So this is what we're always fighting, is that there's someone in the city or somewhere trying to diminish the statements of someone. And I'll tell you, coming as a woman, this was very frustrating for me, because it's always like someone saying, oh, you stupid woman. No. You misunderstood your job. You do not know what you're supposed to be doing. No, judges, do not listen to that Lilian Berrios Paoli, one of the highest ranking women under those mayoral administrations. She doesn't know. She misunderstood her job. And like, you're saying that in 2025, when this woman had a storied long career of knowing what her job was, to make sure that the city ran well and that people served under the promise that she was actually told to give. Crazy.
Well, this, you would think this would be in the era where we've also had court decisions in the law of the land that, as for reproductive rights, dear, you really don't understand. Let the men decide what that is.
Yes.
Well, I think as Jake was pointing out after the
your,
hearing,
your attorney Jake his last
my name. Attorney is Jake yeah. Gardner, who argued the case. Go ahead.
Yeah, he said, listen, like the judges, they're thinking about you guys, but they're also thinking further down the road, like what this means, like what kind of gate are they opening for future litigation? But at the same time, you know, Jake also pointed this out, is like, what they should be thinking about are some more real world ramifications. Like, all right, if this promise that existed for 60 years wasn't exactly a promise, who the hell is going to come to work for New York City anymore?
Right.
That is a real world concern for the judges. And I think that they should be thinking about that.
And that comes at a time. That comes at a time where I was talking with Joe Colangelo, who leads the mechanics SAR, I think Local 246, where headcount is down a lot. They're not rehiring. They're letting the city, the attrition, dig in. So you're down 25,000-30,000 civil servants, and it shows up. It shows up in its various areas. Like, for instance, NYSERS, the city retirement system, right, where it used to take 2 or 3. Months to get your final pension number. Now it can take a year. We're seeing things like the administration of vouchers, Section 8, like important things that people's lives rely on. Now there's all kinds of backlog because post-pandemic, there hasn't been attention to rebuilding the civil service. These jobs are going empty and they're not backfilling it. And so, Marianne, I just wonder, let's catch up a little bit. You did, and I know you can't go into detail, you did have a very long meeting with, we have a mayoral primary, you did meet with former Governor Andrew Cuomo for quite a while. Can you give us a little bit? I mean, you've done a readout to your board now. Can you give us a little more sunlight on that?
So that process, we're still working on. I actually got a call yesterday while we were in court that I do have to follow up on today, because we did ask them to work with us on a few things of clarification. But that still has not been finalized. I'm still working on that. And it's important to make sure that I dot my I's and cross my T's to make sure that that commitment is accurate. And then also trying to work with anyone else. We said that we would endorse any as like a good housekeeping stamp of approval, so to speak, on the retiree issue, that anyone that had supported our issue that said, Marianne, I am going to protect the retirees. I'm not going to force you into Medicare Advantage. I'm going to protect the federal public health benefit of Medicare and the promise that was made to you and your city supplement. I will expedite those reimbursements that are statutorily required to you rather than paying them 16 to 22 months later. I'll give them to you in the year of the quarter of which you're paying them, as well as provide a safety period to secure health care for your dependents when you die. And if they commit to those issues, we would give them that retiree stamp of approval. Well, we had several people like Zoran Mamdani or Zellner Myrie that had not committed to us yet, which we don't understand why. And yet, you know, this like dallying between making an appointment, committing to an appointment, and not committing to it. So we said, listen, we're going to give you one last chance. And on Sunday, we wrote them all a letter, and we said, you've not fulfilled the commitment to us of attending our debate, meeting with us, and signing the letter. Okay, the debate's passed. If you meet with us and sign the letter, you still have an opportunity, as our deadline is coming out for June 4th, to make our announcements. And still today, today is Friday, that letter went out on Sunday, Monday, and no reply from candidate Soren Mamdani, no reply from Zellner Myrie. And that is a problem when you have candidates that are not replying to you. So if they're not willing to commit to a retiree, and we already know that the largest unions in the city of New York, like a DC 37 or UFT, are threatening our electeds to not support these retiree issues in exchange for the DC 37, UFT, or labor strong coalition endorsement. Look, we had Darlene Neely, councilwoman from Brooklyn, I believe she's from, sign on to our 1096 and within 3 days drop right back off after the UFT endorsement came out. That to me is criminal, because she's telling retirees, the largest voting bloc in the city, that it's more important for her to have a union endorsement and to be on a bill that would protect our health care and hers, by the way.
And so, Joe, this question about the quid pro quo that may exist, if you could also talk a bit about, like, how this whole concept of, I guess, basically funding the operation of the city of New York and raises for current employees, which is what this is antithetical to the entire union movement, because you're saying we're going to separate out retirees, put this onus on their back, despite the fact this was what we promised them, so that we can satisfy current workers. And you've done some reporting. It didn't start with the local unions here. The FL-CIO itself is in this up to its eyeballs in some cases.
Yeah, it's just another example of concessionary bargaining, you know, always giving something up, always being on the back foot. You know, I say this all the time. I always remember what I was told by one of the MLC officials. Is like, this is the world we live in. We have to deal with these insurance companies. Not that we have to take on these insurance companies. It's that we have to live with them. We have to get along. That's the leadership of the labor movement right now.
There's some exceptions, of course.
There are some exceptions. Thank God there's some exceptions, but most of it is this business kind of unionism.
Right.
They act like junior partners to the company.
212-209-2877. Are you a member of a union? Are you a retiree? 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. So, Marianne, you are also working on multiple fronts. You've got the work that you're doing with the mayoral primary coming up next month in June. And then also you have this effort that's going on in Albany. You had a setback with Senator Harkin, where he had a very robust endorsement of the bill. And then there was some backsliding there. Can you update us there on that front?
So, yes, we're literally juggling city legislation, state legislation, which the unions have had an impact in interfering, including the New York State AFL-CIO, the UFT and DC 37, in intimidating the state Senate sponsor to alter our language, and trying to reintroduce it with language that really isn't supportive of us. So it's going to waste the legislature's time, waste my time, waste the retirees' time. This is the frustrating part of it. Trying to get elected leaders to recognize that the lives of the people that they were responsible for protecting and upholding the promise made to them, as Joe explained, is more important to them than being endorsed by a large union. And then, of course, this pending litigation. This is the last stop on the Bentkowski case. So I don't really know, we have some plan Bs, plan Cs, but if we don't win this case, it doesn't negate the fact finding that was in the lower court. This court here, the New York State Court of Appeals, the highest court in the state, doesn't do fact finding. They review the case to make sure that it was decided upon based on laws that are currently in place. And if that doesn't find a way to be found, then they may literally overturn the lower court's decision. But that doesn't negate the facts that were found in that, which then we would have to use those facts to try to get the legislature to act to protect us.
And so it's also important to understand we've had members of other unions from throughout the state, retirees, Long Island. And you can you talk about the fact this is a major, also a national issue. And we've had retirees who are auto-enrolled from around the country call into this program. This has been a betrayal that has happened all around the country. Can you update us about the other efforts where you've helped, and they've been successful, in other states, municipal, county, public employees? Retiring.
Yes. So, and I think you guys even covered this in your other periodicals, is that we've helped Delaware, the state Delaware workers. Our attorneys even helped stop that case with its first injunction. We helped retirees in Connecticut. We helped retirees in Ithaca, New York, Cortland, New York, in Vermont, in Illinois, in Ohio, and now in California, we're working with them. So these are all states where these predatory insurance companies went in and sold this deal as, hey, I can give you a Medicare Advantage plan that's better than traditional Medicare, and I'll do it for free. And then by doing that, they convinced legislatures, look, you've got a Broome County Purchasing Alliance in upstate New York that's doing exactly that. There are brokers going around to legislatures saying, I can give you a Medicare Advantage plan, and it costs you nothing. And then, of course, and it's a five-star plan, even though it's like half snake oil and frozen meals.
Well, so we're not talking about the kickbacks, are you?
Oh, heck no. Of course we are.
I'm with the Tony Soprano Insurance Company. Would you like to buy a Medicare Advantage plan? We have a picture of Joe Namath on it.
Yes. Yeah, so in those provisions, like I said before, even our New York City Aetna contract has a gain-sharing provision that if their medical-to-cost ratio is at a certain point, it will split the profits with the city of New York.
Slow down. You're so smart. You gain? What is that? It's, Joe, what?
Yeah, Bobby, you just mentioned the DOJ fraud case against the biggest insurance companies, United Healthcare's implosion.
Right.
I mean, you talk about people who don't know what's going on, who are living in a bubble. It's these people that are pushing the Medicare Advantage, you know, behind the Medicare Advantage push. I mean, I just got a reaction from the mayor's office in Albany last night, and they were still saying that we look forward to pressing ahead because Medicare Advantage is an improvement over retirees' current health care. That's given everything. Do you look at the news? Do you see any headlines? How could you, anybody at this stage, really honestly argue that a Medicare Advantage plan would be an improvement upon what retirees have right now?
And what's stunning about this is that this is now clearly getting to look like an ongoing criminal conspiracy. These key TAM cases, just quick review for you. We give you a really obscure knowledge here. Back during the Civil War, there were certain people like, Mr. Haney, I have here some cardboard boots. It's genuine leather. You'll like it. Yes, that animal over there in the field, that may look like a mule, but no, sir, that's a cavalry horse of the finest pedigree. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is Medicare Advantage. All right. I'm just saying. I know they don't get it any other way because they keep saying the same thing. I guess. I don't know. Marianne, what do you have ahead for this week?
I don't know, Bob. I think I need a rest after this week. And feels like we've been on this cavalry ride for quite a while. The retirees are handling several different interviews. We have council candidates Dimple Willibus and Ben Wetzler and Rachel Storch being interviewed. We started doing Friday Night Lives, and now we're doing Every Night Lives at this point. Every night between 6 and 7-ish. Just check our YouTube channel. We are literally live streaming almost every night next week on interviewing candidates running against incumbents that have not been supporting protecting the federal public health benefit of Medicare or retirees and the promise made. So that's really what I'm going to decompress from this whole week.
Sounds like a party time to me. So Joe Maniscalco, what's up for you next week? What are you doing?
Well, we're staying on this story. We just posted a story yesterday that in the midst of all of this, the retirees also stressed that no matter what happens, Intro 1096 needs to be enacted. I mean, Chris Marte, the sponsor of the bill, saying people like to talk, the good talk. But when it comes down to it, why aren't you on the bill? He called that hypocrisy. I think that's what it is.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This is Marian Pizzatola, my co-pilot on these magical mystery rides on Friday morning, a retired FDNY EMT and leader of the New York City Organization of Public Service Retirees. Joe Maniscalco, my kind of boss at Work Bites. I guess it's a cooperative, right, Joe?
It's a cooperative. Now and forever, Bob.
All right. Thanks so much. Democracy Now! Is up next. Be sure to tune on Monday morning at 6 a.m. for our new expanded edition of Labor Monday and our Global Market Watch with labor historian Dr. Joe Wilson and Jim Henry, noted economist and international tax lawyer. That's followed by the Global Briefing from Democracy Now!, which is followed by Jenna Flanagan's two-hour We Decide America at the Crossroads 2025. We produce with Pacifica Radio's amazing network of 200 plus affiliates in 40 states. Help us to track and document the history we're all making together and call today 833-922-4692, 833-922-4692. Thank you, Michael G. Haskins. And remember, we get the world we fight for nonviolently.
Lord, help us.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying.
Oh, brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
That's right.
You know we got to find a way to bring some loving, loving here today.
Problem.
understand we all need somebody to lean on. Why don't you call
sing to
on
us, Judy.
When you need
Judy Gorman, the rising of us all. We thank you so much for your music, your energy, and your love. Judy Gorman. This is radio station WBAI in New York. We're at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. We appreciate you, those of you who have been with us for a long time now, supporting this commercial-free, listener-sponsored radio station. It's because of you that we've been able to exist since 1960 in the center of the FM dial in New York City, which is no small feat. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Our pledge line is always open. If you can, if you are able to do so, please call it, leave your name, leave your number at 833-922-4692. Do what you can. If the station is important to you, if the information that is presented 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if that is important to you, then please call our pledge line at 833-922-4692. Leave your name and leave your number. Somebody will call you back very shortly. Our mailing address is